Hello and welcome to Vic Plume, Comedy Slave, podcast number 4. What did I say it like that? I should have just said it's Vic Plume, Comedy Slave, podcast number 4. But there are people from other countries who have trouble. I know that people, I've talked to Americans before, and they've said, could you slow down speaking, please? I can't understand you. They said, how do you understand us so well? I said, probably because we've been listening to I Dream of Gilligan's Navy for the last, 50 years. Those shows were on, Gilligan's Island, McHale's Navy, and I Dream of Jeannie, shows like that. So we know how to speak like Americans. But Americans don't know how to speak like us. I have heard Americans do Australian accents and they don't do them very well. In fact, I was talking to a couple of American backpackers out in the middle of nowhere once about 10 years ago. And they said, oh, could you slow down speaking, please? We can't understand you. I said, well, would it help if I talk like that, boy? Would that make it easier if I talk to you like that? Can you understand me now? I can talk real fast, but you can still hear me now, can't you? Yeah? All right, yeah. They couldn't believe it. How do you do that? Well, we've been listening to American TV and watching it forever. But today, you're in luck. To anyone listening from anywhere on the world, we are playing an Australian short story that I wrote about 10 years ago again when I was out in the bush, the great Australian bush. It's called Cockatoo Concerto in Effing Sharp. I hope you enjoy it. Cheers. Once upon a time in Melbourne, Australia, I had a couple of thousand drinks with friends in celebration of one of humanity's many brands of religion. The next day was called Boxing Day, and over a few more drinks we celebrated the birth of boxing. The following day we celebrated the amazing fact we were still capable of celebrating, and again, after a few too many celebratory drinks, I took myself to bed before the sun rose and turned me to dust. When I woke around noon that same day, I felt sicker than a three-headed Irish wino at the end of a St. Patrick's Day long weekend. I'd worked hard and it was now paying off. I had an almighty three-day hangover to deal with. Unfortunately, a mate texted me. He'd travelled down from Brisbane for the holidays and wanted me to celebrate with him at my local pub. I texted back that I'd already been celebrating for 3 days non-stop, and if I continued to celebrate, he'd soon be celebrating my cremation, where the alcohol-fuelled fireball would send us both to our great reward. He replied with a text, declaring I was weak, followed by another text suggesting I didn't have a hangover at all but was probably tired from taking knitting classes. I let him know he was correct and that I didn't have a hangover. I had 3 hangovers and wished I had have taken a 3-day knitting class. After receiving another humorous text from him, I reluctantly decided to head down to the pub to celebrate with him. And that's when my liver used a painful form of Morse code to tell me that if I had another drink, it was going to move into a separate bedroom. I was in an alcoholic Christmas rut and needed to go walk about, or more accurately, drive about. So I packed my Toyota van, complete with a double bed, and escaped north to Australia's longest single river, the Murray. Three and a half hours later, I was driving above the flowing Victoria/New South Wales border and heading into the world's biggest river red gum forest. Spending time alone with my liver was imperative for the success of our relationship, and I knew exactly where to go. 30 kilometres up a bumpy dirt track, a site I'd camped at a few times before. I knew there'd be a few campers here and there, but the track was rough going and the further you drove up it, the less people you saw. Don't get me wrong, I have nothing against people. In fact, some of my best friends are people. But it was imperative I got some time out. So deep inside the massive eucalypt forest I drove. After an hour of crawling along the crater-filled track, I reclaimed my old campsite. A beautiful open grass space, around half an acre, surrounded by towering, shady river red gums set at the top of a huge horseshoe bend in the river. Swimming was just the therapy I needed because a few days earlier I'd fractured three ribs and put my spine out when the universe punished me with a dose of instant karma. I'd been riding my push bike down a hill alongside two magpies who decided not to land on their designated tree branches every time I squawked loudly and clapped my hands. I'd managed to stop them from landing on a branch twice and was going for a third attempt when I landed on one myself. A branch had fallen onto the road and it wanted a cuddle. As I untangled my broken self from it, I heard kookaburras laughing loudly, but I swore it was the two magpies. But that was then, and now I was sitting on the riverbank of the mighty River Murray, taking it all in. The river was wide and flowing slowly like molten chocolate. Sunlit leaves glistened as a warm, gentle breeze caressed my forehead. It was a magnificent bush setting, the type of place you'd expect to see Tarzan swinging and crocodiles lurking. But there were no crocodiles within 2,000 kilometres and definitely no Tarzans, neither swinging nor lurking. The only negative was the flies. And although they were extremely friendly, at least they weren't pushing me to have a celebratory drink. And even if they did, I was now safely miles from the nearest pub. Before long, a superb blue wren landed on a tree beside me. He danced up and down the trunk, whistling, perhaps looking for a female. When I copied his whistle, his head feathers stood to attention like the back hair on an angry dog. But because these critters are only as big as my thumb, its aggression just seemed cute. He whistled again, and so did I, frustrating him even more as to where the hell the other wren was hiding. A third whistle sent him hopping frantically up and down the tree trunk, his head turning from side to side like a confused puppy. This made me laugh out loud until I remembered the two magpies, and then I stopped immediately. By mid-afternoon, the flies were even friendlier and had invited their friends and family to come and welcome the big two-legged wingless fly sitting alone on the riverbank. After receiving enough love, I got my pushbike out of the van and went exploring. The flies seemed to think it rude to let me ride alone, but no matter how well I explained it to them, they wouldn't take no for an answer. The tracks leading off one side of the main track led to prospective campsites along the river, while the tracks on the other side, originally used for timber cutting, were mostly used by pig shooters. The first track I travelled down was very narrow, with mini Grand Canyons to manoeuvre around along the way. After pedalling for about 5 minutes, I could see the river through the trees. 30 seconds later, I saw a tent, a four-wheel drive, and a very athletic pit bull who I reckon hadn't seen fresh meat in months. It was a scary-looking beast that came charging at me that day. Scary enough to send the flies packing, with me following close behind. As I frantically pedaled away, I heard a bloke scolding the dog, but with a tone in his voice that conveyed, "Good doggy, you've done your job well. Come to daddy and I'll give you a pat and some beef jerky." We made it back to the main track, my flying friends and I, and everything was going well until I went down another track. A fisher person had left a lead sinker attached to 20 feet of fishing line, which attached itself around me and the cogs of my bike. Luckily, the fisher person wasn't there because it would have been embarrassing sitting on my bike while they held me up by the scruff of my neck to take a photo of the one that didn't get away. The day's temperature was now at peak heat. I was extra hot and sweaty, but I got busy untangling the fishing line, giving me and the flies an opportunity to get to know each other on a whole other level. Finally, I was free of the fishing line and down the track we went. The potholes and corrugations were beginning to cause pain to my fractured ribs, but I thought I'd be okay and that'll teach me for thinking. After being chased by another dog, which was much less scary but much more yappily annoying, we turned around and made our way back to camp, just me and 40,000 of my new furry flying friends. On arriving back at camp, I sat my weary ribs on a chair by the sparkling river. My friends were exceptionally grateful I'd taken them out for a long ride, and they kindly thanked me by dive-bombing my face and eyeballs with wet kisses and by flying back and forth against the inner walls of my nostrils and ear holes. I'd had annoying friends before, but these guys you just couldn't shake. Sunset wasn't far off, and I took the opportunity to play some songs by the river. Strumming my guitar, I realised it was out of tune. Unfortunately, I was unable to tune it by ear because both of my ear holes were like amphitheatres filled to capacity with an excited audience, eagerly buzzing in anticipation of their first song. Keen to play, I retrieved my highly sensitive electronic guitar tuner from the van, but as I set it to the key of E and plucked the first string, 27,000 sulfur-crested cockatoos, all screeching in F-sharp, came home to roost. I know they were screeching in F-sharp because my guitar tuner said so, just before its casing cracked and it burst into flames. I knew how raucous cockies could be, but so many of the feathered furies had landed in the trees above me that even the flies stopped buzzing and poked their heads out of my orifices to see what the hell the racket was. Those creamy white devils' shrieking screams were so harsh they scratched bathroom surfaces in other countries, while bringing tears to all four of my eyes. After apologising to the flies for ever having thought they'd been annoying, I checked my ears for blood and then unintentionally tuned every string of my guitar to F-sharp. As the cockies battled for their hierarchical positions in the trees, their screeching only intensified, forcing me to cover my ear holes, drop to my knees and scream, "Christ on a corn chip, my kingdom for a shotgun." As the insane screeching escalated, the neurons in my brain began ringing in F-sharp. But just as I threw a noose over the branch of a tree, the cockies became suddenly quiet. Even more surprisingly, the flies decided they'd given enough love and left me in peace. It was like a miracle from the Bible. The plagues were over, and there I was, alone at last, seated in front of the mighty, majestic Murray River, taking in its awesome energy and watching the sun set over the magnificent, radiant River Red Gum Forest. It was too good to be true, and then the sky turned black. It was only a rough estimate, but going by the sound of the ever-increasing hum and the ever-blackening sky, I reckon there was between 25 and 30 trillion mosquitoes descending upon me and upon anything else that may have contained even one drop of life-sustaining fluid. And it wasn't even dark yet. Standing up from my chair, I saluted the brave men and women of Pearl and Darwin Harbours and apologised to the cockies for thinking they'd been annoying. Oh, how I now missed their ear-shattering, blood-curdling, screeching shrieks. And oh, what I'd now give to sit and play my guitar in effing sharp while my old mates the flies filled my holes with ever-loving supersonic biz-buzzing. Yes, I would have given anything to go back in time and enjoy the comparative peacetime with my furry and feathered friends, if it meant I could avoid the horror that was about to rain down upon me. Standing to attention, alone for the last time, I now understood why the flies had left in such a hurry and why the cockies had fought so aggressively for the best positions in the trees. They knew what was to come. The humming of the mosquito squadrons was now so loud it put the cockies to shame. With only precious seconds remaining, I withdrew my salute, about-faced, cried out feebly for my mother and raced for the safety of the van. My vehicle was only 2 metres away, but I must have killed a million of those wretched bloodsuckers before I'd even made it halfway there. 1 metre to go and the loss of blood was taking its toll. I was weakening, but somehow managed to take out another 5 or 10 million of those flying filth before reaching the side door. These callous creatures of the night hadn't seen fresh meat for longer than that pit bull, who was now either hiding in the river and breathing through a piece of bamboo or stopped dead in its tracks halfway to the river like a deflated football. Desperately reaching for the handle, I barely had enough strength to open the door. I was fading fast and knew if I didn't make it inside the van, I was done for. These vampires were voracious and I would soon be their venison. With every last milligram of strength and willpower, I heaved the door open, the vacuum sucking in at least 200,000, with more flying in every second. With no other options available, I leapt in, believing it wiser to try and fight a few hundred thousand inside the van than stay outside and be sucked drier than a pharaoh's mummy. I slammed the door shut, turned on the ignition, and set the heater's fan to flat knacker. The pain in my fractured ribs had gotten worse due to the day's bumpy bike ride, and I was experiencing severe muscle cramps in my upper spine. Laying still wasn't too bad, but trying to move was as much fun as being kicked in the balls during root canal surgery. Even thinking about swatting a mosquito made me shudder, which in turn made me wince, and it was at about this time the mosquitoes started open-cut mining. By the time they'd finished gorging on me, it looked like I was wearing red Rocky Road ankle bracelets. It was going to be a rough night, but I had no idea. The next morning I woke to find I hadn't slept all night. I'd managed to kill a large percentage of the parasitic pirates, but there were always 10 or 15 of them taking bad violin lessons in my ear holes, while others sucked blood from all and any exposed flesh. When I opened the van door, the mosquitoes were so bloated they floated out the door and up to the sky like red party balloons. Gingerly removing myself from the van, I took a look in the driver's side mirror. I was as pale as a quadriplegic altar boy at a Christian Brothers nudist camp, and when the sun hit me, I ran for the shadows. The cockies were already awake and screeching in effing sharp, and my furry flying friends were back and buzzing with excited anticipation of another bike trek. Surprisingly, my ribs and back pain, which had been throbbing all night, had magically disappeared, and the 8-mile-long line of marching ants dutifully soldiering in and out of my sugar container didn't seem to worry me a bit. Some campers I'd nicknamed the Griswolds had arrived during the night and planted their tent so close to me that when I farted, I turned their sandwiches to toast. They were going into town to have a meal before sunset and told me they'd be back after dark to avoid the mozzies.
"Excellent idea," I replied eerily. "I look forward to your return. Try the steakhouse in Echuca Town. They've got the most tender steak around, and oh," I added, sliding my sunglasses on from the safety of the shaded side of the van, "you'll find their best eaten rare."
Okay, we've come to the end of Thick Plume Comedy Slave podcast number 4. I suppose I could, if I live long enough, be sitting here saying, well, that's the end of podcast number 2,872,000. I hope you enjoyed the show. But today, it's podcast number 4. Not 4,262,971. Hope you enjoyed Cockatoo Concerto in Effing Sharp, short story that I wrote about 10 years ago, just before the Black Saturday bushfires burnt my house to the ground, ripped the roof off, blew it 100 metres down the paddock, and destroyed every living thing in its path. My condolences to all of those who lost loved ones. I hope you're doing well. But yes, it's come to the end of the show, and I've got to say, thanks to HollywoodEdge.com, FootageFirm.com for sound effects and music. I'd like to say thanks to Mastering.com.au for the amazing work they, Buzz and Vicky, do. And g'day to the kids and the horse and the cats and the dogs and all the others running around rampant there. John Robinson,
John Robinson. Not Robertson, Robinson. Webs with a Z. Websplus.com.au. Website host. Great bloke. These podcasts can be heard on Buzzsprout.com and VicPlume.com. VicPlume. I remember the police pulled me over once. Pulled a mate of mine over, actually, and the policeman said to me, he said, "And what's your name?" I said, "Victor Plume." He said, "How do you spell that?" I said, VicTorPlume. Anyway, I don't know how we got out of that one, but they let us off. Bit of humour got us through, I think. Don't forget to check out The Misadventures of Bo Hogart and the Brilliant Blue-Eyed Woman. That's my comedy novel I've written about a genius woman who has found a cheap alternative, a cheap, clean alternative to fossil fuel, making her the most wanted person on Earth. And she's being tracked down by an astronomically alcoholic private detective, Bo Hogart. B-O-H-O-G-A-R-T. The Misadventures of Bo Hogart. Before I go, I should say thank you to Andrew at Sound Park Studios in Melbourne, Australia, and to Paul Jonas, who plays an amazing fiddle, commonly known as a violin, on my song Slave No More. And we'll end the show on Slave No More, as per usual. It's the only song I've got recorded. I've got a heap more to get recorded, but one day perhaps I'll make money from this podcast and then I'll start recording some more songs. Until then, it's Slave No More. Anyway, love ya. Take it easy. Over and out of it. Take care. It's cheaper than crack. May your news be good news. That's it. I'm gone. The music's dying out. Here it comes. It's dying out. Is it dying out? Yes, it is. No worries. Have a good one. Take care. Oi.
I don't want to be a slave no more. I don't want to be just another banker's hog. I just want to be free to be true. Oh, money makes me mad, it takes me away from you. Yeah. If we were billionaires, we'd all still be slaves of a system we're too blind to see. The system's failed, there's a blatant glitch. Without money, we'd all be rich. I don't wanna be a slave no more. I don't wanna be just another banker's hog. But I just wanna be free to be true. Money makes me mad, it takes me away from you. Do you know why all the world's in such a mess? Why we call destruction progress? Why profit is placed above care? It's 'cause money inspires corruption everywhere. I don't wanna be a slave no more. I don't wanna be just another banker's hog. Well, I just wanna be free to be true. Money makes me mad, it takes me away from you. How can so many people be happy with the world in slavery? So many starve while others are so rich. But make no mistake, we're all the system's bitch. I don't wanna be a slave, now I'm out. I don't wanna be just another banker's hog. Well, I just wanna be free to be true. Money makes me mad, it takes me away from you. Money, why can't we see? Money, it's a man-made disease. Money, why can't we see? Money, it doesn't have to be. While I see birds eating freely in the trees, I see the wearer in prison, but it's we who hold the key. Yes, without money, we'd all be truly free.